go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back for our final part of this very, very provocative, very troubling conversation about the condition of the United States military by a man who has chronicled it with his colleagues at the Heritage Foundation in a most formidable new product, the 2018 Index of U.S. Military Strength. You can find it at heritage.org. He is Dakota Wood, the editor of that volume and a senior research fellow at the Heritage Foundation, specializing in defense programs, drawing upon his very considerable experience in the United States military, specifically rising to the rank of a lieutenant colonel in the United States Marine Corps. Dakota, you've given us so much food for thought. I just wanted to round this conversation, this assessment of where we are with you, by asking about one last piece that's often overlooked, I find, but is absolutely critical to any effort to remedy some of the issues that you've raised here, at least the size of our armed forces, the capabilities, the modernity, most especially of our ground, air, and seagoing elements. Talk, if you would, about the industrial base. We've had a busman's holiday, as you say, for a long time. We've been procuring very small quantities of lots of stuff we need. Is it sufficient unto the day? And if not, what do we do about it?
We have unintentionally, but just as effectively, introduced single points of vulnerability in our defense industrial base for very good reasons, intended to maximize efficiency of the use of a taxpayer dollar. We would engage in competition for major programs and neck that down to a single type or model or series, you know, winner take all kinds of thought. It's easier to train mechanics, airframe maintenance technicians, pilots, operators on a single platform instead of six different platforms. So efficiency drives you to eliminate redundancies, too much overlap, and try to get the most bang for the buck in a sense. But what that means is, if you're only going to buy a single type of fighter, and the company that wins that contract, they're the only ones building that fighter. And the other companies now don't have any business to keep them in business. So if Northrop Grumman hadn't won the contract for the B-21, which is the follow-on stealth bomber, they would have been out of the aircraft manufacturing business. The F-35 is supposed to be the fighter of the future. And you know, we had one company that won that contract. It only is produced in one plant in Fort Worth, Texas. General Dynamics is the only company that makes main battle tanks. They have a single plant in Lima, Ohio. Huntington Ingalls is the only company in the country that produces aircraft carriers. So, you know, you can see that as we go to single types of equipment or platforms, one company wins that contract and everybody else is left out there in the breeze. And so unless you have business coming in, you can't really maintain a workforce, and you start shuttering facilities and laying off your workforce, and you can't recuperate from that. You can't recover that in short order. So when you have a smaller force, it doesn't have as big of a demand signal. There aren't as many companies that can compete for a limited pool of contracts that are being let out there, and you start down toward the, you know, kind of that death spiral. So if you want competition that generates innovation, if you want redundancies in your force, you know, let's say that we produce the F-35, which obviously we are, and we have an enemy that finds some vulnerability in its operating characteristics that it can exploit, your entire air fleet is now compromised, and you don't have a backup or a plan B that provides you similar capabilities, but from a different manufacturer and a different design characteristic. I mean, does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense to me, and I think just adds to the overall picture you've described. Let me ask you, against this backdrop, it really seems as though the nation has departed from the philosophy my old boss Ronald Reagan called peace through strength. It's not the first time we've done this, to be sure, Dakota, as you know so well, but it hasn't ended well each time we've experimented with these things, whether we call them peace dividends or, you know, simply cutting back on the military establishment that we generated to fight world wars or what have you. Give us a flavor of the historical experience with these experiments and why we really risk mortal peril for the country as well as its interests and allies if we persist in it.
Right. Well, I think perceived weakness invites or emboldens opportunism. And that weakness can be lack of attention, lack of actual presence, lack of real-world capabilities. Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait back in 90 when he perceived that the U.S. had excluded Kuwait from our circle of, hey, don't move into there, otherwise we'll be upset. The same argument can be applied to the Korean Peninsula when the Korean War kicked off. You know, where we get distracted in certain things, it opens up opportunity in other regions. So if we're fully involved in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's taken everything we've got, does Russia move into parts of Eastern Europe and into the Baltic area? If we're tied up in the Middle East, China sees opportunity to create its own islands, because what is the U.S. going to do, right? And after they've created the island and militarized it, now are we going to take it away from them or force them to unmake, the island? So there are these repeated examples where we're not the world's policemen trying to correct all wrongs, but we are the only global power that has the means to help maintain stability in certain regions where a wannabe hegemonic power who seeks to exert its dominance in a region and exclude the United States from access to markets, where they attempt to upend representative, Republican or Democratic forms of government and install authoritarian sorts of regimes to provide sanctuary for groups like Al-Qaeda and Islamic State. Those are injurious. They threaten U.S. economic interests. The broad array of alliance structures where you have representative democracies, those are long-term core U.S. interests.
Security interests as well as economic.
We don't want people coming into the United States and waging jihad within our own borders. How do you keep regions from falling into that kind of disarray? So it's in our interest to be involved, but you have to have the capacity to do that.
So let's just finish with this thought. What, in your shortest of short form, do you call for the American people to know and for their elected representatives to do about the dismal picture you've just painted?
Well, it's like gardening. You can't go in and weed the garden once in a season and figure that it's good to go for the rest of the planting season. This is something you constantly have to deal with. The world doesn't remain static. Security isn't something where you can just write a check 1 year and then ignore it for 10 years and think that everything is going to be hunky-dory.
Or worse, not write a check and leave it alone for 20 years.
Exactly. So this is, it's just a cost of doing business. And what has occurred in our country is over the last 45 years, we've averaged about 6% of GDP on spending on national defense and national security. We're now down to about 3.3% of that. If we were spending 5% on an $18 trillion economy, that would be $900 billion. We're limited by the Budget Control Act to like 575 or thereabouts. There have been proposals to bump that up to 623 and with additional fundings up to 700. So we actually need to be spending about $200 billion more than what we currently are, and that would still be below the historical average that the United States has thought important to spend to protect our interests here at home. And so the American public has been ill-served by politicians who try to prioritize spending on various goodies provided to the American public instead of the one thing that only the federal government can do, and that's secure our country.
Dakota Wood, brilliantly put. A brilliant new book from you and your colleagues at the Heritage Foundation, the 2018 Index of U.S. Military Strength. Folks, please check it out, and more to the point, share it with people who have a need to know. Dakota, thank you for sharing it with us and doing so handsomely in the course of this hour conversation. I hope you'll come back to us again very soon, and that the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.